Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show.
I definitely mean you have to be easy on yourself. And I think you have to, you know, give yourself some grace, because with the frustrating challenges, there's also a lot of good that comes. And so I try to just be grateful for that and grateful for like the success that I have.
Thomas Edison, Richard Branson, John F. Kennedy, Mozart, Michael Jordan, Will Smith. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of vocations. Why is it that we rarely hear that they have or had ADHD? And you know what we hear even less about? Serena Williams, Emma Watson, Mel Robbins, Whoopi Goldberg,
Agatha Christie, Erin Brockovich, Cher. Yeah, the successful women navigating ADHD. And that's exactly why I started this podcast, ADHD for Smartass Women. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, now a coach. I'm also the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a system that helps people like you figure out what they should do with their life. And we're here today to talk ADHD, your strengths, your symptoms, your workarounds, and how you proudly stand out instead of trying to fit in. I credit my ADHD for some of my greatest gifts. And you know what? I spy a happier life for you, too. So without further ado, a shiny new episode is starting now. Hello, I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for episode number 242 of ADHD for Smartass Women. Before we start, I just want a little mention that my patented program, Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, is now open, and you can find out more at spyhappy.me/A-OK. Use the code PODCASTSASS, S-A-S-S, to get $500 off just for being a valued podcast listener. My purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. So of course, I am just delighted to introduce you to Jessica Liddell. Oh gosh. Sorry, Jessica. Jessica Liddell. I ask my guests how to pronounce their name, and then inevitably I get it all wrong. So Jessica Gorlin Liddell is a professional mosaic mural artist and the owner and founder of Bella Mosaic Art, where she's been making mosaics professionally since 1997. Her work can be found in private collections and public spaces throughout the country. She has extensive experience with large-scale installations, so she's been featured in numerous periodicals. Her work has also appeared on HGTV, The Travel Channel, Good Day Philadelphia, and the 215. Jessica has facilitated collaborative projects and creative team building for numerous schools, hospitals, municipalities, and nonprofit organizations. She lives with her husband, daughter, and dog in the Roxborough neighborhood of Philadelphia. Jessica, welcome. And did I get all of that right? Great. It's such a pleasure to have you here. As I was telling you, and I'll tell our audience as well, because I feel like nothing is quite as perfect as it normally is, but I am actually in New York City. I am in my son's apartment. As you can tell, the backdrop, Frank Sinatra, who kind of looks like the devil, and not with my good microphone. I have my little travel one that I use, which frankly, I recorded this podcast, I don't know, for about a year and a half, I think, before I had my good microphone with this microphone. So we've been trying to adjust mics and get sound, you know, to work. And so we hope that we did it. But anyway, Jessica, you know that I want to talk about what it is you do and how you've been so successful at what you do. But as usual, I always want to start with the ADHD diagnosis. So can you tell me a little bit about that? So was it a later in life diagnosis or were you diagnosed as a child?
Sure. So I was diagnosed at 30. I had just had my first and only child. And, you know, I was feeling a little overwhelmed. I was having a hard time kind of managing my schedule and her schedule, you know, having a newborn. Because I'm a business owner, I didn't have a very specific maternity leave. Like I didn't have, I was kind of trying to work and trying to, you know, figure out what it meant to, you know, be a mom of a newborn. And it was all very overwhelming. And one day my husband came home and walked into the kitchen and said, Jess, do you know that the burner is on? Like, how long has the burner been on? And I couldn't figure out, like, had I made tea recently? Has it been on since that morning when I made coffee for myself? And he said, you really have to talk to someone. This, I think there's a problem. And that was kind of the catalyst. So I went online.
So can I ask you, Jessica, yes. Did you trust that what he said was in fact true because you had kind of been noticing all of these sorts of things?
You know, because like the house could have burned down with my new baby in it, I was probably more receptive to that. And was like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like, what the heck? So yeah, there were some like echoes of, my friends teasing me that I was so ADD, and I thought maybe there's something to this. Maybe I need to look in. Maybe this is what's happening. And so I went online and took one of those surveys.
So I need to stop you again. So what you're telling me is that you in the back of your mind already had this sense that maybe I have ADHD.
Yeah.
Before any of this. Okay. Interesting.
And, you could at that time like pull up like a questionnaire, kind of like if you answered yes to this many questions kind of
yeah.
thing.
Screener.
That's what I did. And it was like, every single question was like a resounding yes. And I thought, oh, okay. And I kept kind of learning and got some library books, and I can't remember which ones, but I remember staying up all night, reading them, thinking, oh, this is it. This is what's happening. And then, I went to my doctor, paper in hand that I printed out of my computer. That was kind of how that ball got.
And about how long ago was that?
So I just turned 50. So that was when I was 30. I just turned 30.
Okay.
And my daughter.
Okay. So can you tell us what was Jessica like as a child?
It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.
Well, as a child, I was, very happy, creative, had lots of friends, always, talking in class, very social. When I hit middle school, I started running into some problems. And I started, really having trouble with school. And, I was kind of moved from the gifted classes to the remedial classes. And, that was kind of the beginning of my challenges with school, with academics.
So when you say during middle school, was this right around puberty when you started to notice that you had just changed?
Yeah, but also the material was getting so much harder,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't able to keep up. Yeah, I think that was also happening.
What about the social stuff? Was that still kind of your strong suit?
Yeah, I was always a really social kid. I had lots of friends. And I was always being told that I was too noisy and loud in class and that kind of thing. So
okay.
I was always like, chatting it up with somebody.
So I can't remember. Maybe we didn't even talk about it. So you started to struggle in school, and did the struggles get worse throughout high school?
Yes. Yeah. So bad that my parents and I were arguing a lot. And I was being threatened with boarding school.
Oh.
And then my mother was threatening to send me to Catholic school, which was very strange because we were Jewish and wasn't sure how that was going to solve anything because...
You know, I went to Catholic school, and from my understanding, there's always one or two girls, and mine was all girl. There was always one or two girls in every grade that was Jewish. Yeah, and there's probably no Jewish school in the area.
I was like, why would I go to Catholic school? And so I actually moved away from my parents to try and get a fresh start at 16.
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on a second. So what does that look like? Does that look like you getting so frustrated with your parents, they're so frustrated with you because they're thinking you're just not trying hard enough, that you just up and said, you know what, I'm going to basically emancipate myself and move out?
All of the above, yes.
Oh, okay.
But actually, I had an older brother. Now, I have older siblings that are, this is a whole long story, but they are much older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So my eldest brother had just had kids.
Okay.
He had two kids, and he lived in Northern California, very close to you.
What city?
He lived in a little town on the way to Point Reyes called Forest Knolls, if you know it, near Lagunitas and Samuel P. Taylor Park. So he was overwhelmed himself with his kids, and I had done a lot of babysitting and a lot of childcare, so... we kind of worked out that I was going to move in with him, help him with kids, and then go to the local high school there.
And did that work out better for you?
It was a great move for me. It really was. Like, it totally changed my life in so many ways. So
how?
Well, the high school had an incredible ceramics program, and that is where I discovered ceramics. And so that was the biggest thing. And, you know, being from California, there's just a different level of acceptance in Northern California, maybe than in Southern California. I felt a little less like an outsider, I guess. And I felt a little more nurtured in Northern California, not to offend a bunch of Southern Californians. But, it was just a different feeling in school.
Well, I think there's probably a greater understanding of creativity and a willingness to embrace it, certainly in Northern California. And I would think certainly with ceramics, that would probably be one of the best places to be.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, my district had just this incredible ceramics program, and there have been quite a few professional artists that have come out of the district. So
I'm curious, doing really well in that one thing, and it sounds like you enjoyed it more than enjoyed it. You really loved it, and you were also very good at it. Did that change anything with respect to school in general? So
absolutely.
You just got better in all subjects because you had this one anchor.
Honestly, I think it saved me. It kept me coming to school. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wanted to go to school because I could go and, you know, do this thing that I was so excited about, that I was so into. And I had a wonderful teacher, Warren Fairbanks, who he would allow me to, you know, sit, be in his classroom all the time, on my lunch breaks, during, you know, my free periods. And I would just stay in there. And at the time, I was really into throwing on the wheel. Mm-hmm. And so...
Is that like pottery? Is that what that means? Throwing,
yes,
on the wheel?
Exactly.
Okay.
You're throwing pottery on a wheel. So I was so fortunate that he was supportive. And because I was, you know, I had to be at school to go to ceramics class, kept me going to all the subjects that I didn't particularly care for, like economics, and, yeah, history and all that stuff.
Yeah. But you got better in those. And so what did your parents think?
So my parents were happy. But the interesting thing about that is I left my parents at 16 and I never went back.
Mm.
You know, that was like kind of when I was on my own from 16 on. Because I left my brother's place at 18, I went in an apartment, and You know, I was already established and my parents had sold their house and retired. So it was, you know, I ended up having to, yeah, kind of do things for myself a little early.
So what did you do after high school?
So after high school, I went to community college, College of Marin.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you, I am assuming that the high school you were in was also much smaller than the school you were used to.
It was huge difference. It was like, I think our graduating class was 100.
Yeah.
And it had been hundreds of kids in Southern California all at this high school that I had attended.
Okay. And I didn't understand that. I guess I got all confused because I know that you're from Philadelphia, but you were raised in Southern California. Is that what you're saying? And then moved to your brothers up in Northern California.
Yes. Okay. I was raised in Lake Forest, California, which is like kind of near Laguna Beach. A lot of people go to Laguna Beach on vacation. Yeah. So it's like inland, where the 5 meets the 405, as they say.
Got it.
Okay. I sound like a real Californian when I say that.
So you went to community college, College of Marin. They call it CALM, right? Did they call it CALM then?
Yeah.
And then what? What were you studying at the College of Marin?
So I was just at the time trying to, doing ceramics, of course, because I wanted to do ceramics.
And were you thinking that's what I want to do professionally? Or at that point where you're like, you can't do that as a, you know, professional?
Yeah, I had the chorus of people telling me, you can't be an artist. That's not going to work out. So I was trying to, you know, come up with a practical thing that I can study. And I was going to, you know, I worked with kids a lot. I'd done a lot of teaching. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, as a young person, like a camp counselor, you know, teaching different activities. I enjoyed that. And so I decided I was going to be a teacher. So I was getting my general education at community college. And then, you know, I thought at some point I would transfer.
And so what happened?
So my brother found this school. It was this tiny liberal arts school in San Francisco called New College of California.
Is it still there? Because I haven't heard of it.
No, it was a strange place, but they didn't give grades. They had kind of this like self-guided, you know, like you came up with your own.
Was it like pass, no pass?
Yeah. And so he said, I think this will work out really well for you. And it did. It was very experiential. And, you know, that worked out well. So I took some courses there. That's where I graduated from with my BA. And then I always would like jump in and out. I was on like a 5, maybe even 6-year plan. I would jump in and out, like take some ceramics classes at another, you know, community college, City College in San Francisco. I took ceramics at Laney College at some point in Oakland. Like I was on the ceramics community college tour.
And so what was your major? Like, what did you graduate in? What were you studying?
So I was studying education, but at some point after spending, you know, they put you at New College, they put us in, they had some partnerships with local schools and they put us in the school. You know, it wasn't a student teaching. It wasn't anything that formal, but they just wanted us to, you know, get a sense of what it looks like in the classroom. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this. This doesn't seem like me. Like, I don't think I want to be a teacher. And I took a little time off. This was when I was 20. I took a semester off and I went backpacking in Europe. And I ended up in Barcelona, which is a city that's famous for their mosaic.
Yeah.
And Tony Gaudí was an architect there that covered the facades of his buildings with mosaic. And so I was like backpacking along and I walked up and saw this incredible building and was just blown away. I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. And so that changed my major from that point. I decided to major in arts education I was still trying to be somewhat practical, arts administration and studio art. So because I could kind of design this major according to my interests, that's what I did.
And it wasn't too late.
No.
You still had enough time, enough classes to take that you could kind of guide yourself in that direction. It's so interesting. If I told you how many people I speak with, and I'm actually thinking of my son right now as well, how their life changes when they take some time and they go travel.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's not an unusual story.
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, because I kind of realized, well, all of my side that I love, like I can teach and I can, you know, do ceramics and I can create public art, you know, using this medium. And at the time I'd been teaching at a Boys and Girls Club. I've been I'd taken time off, obviously, to go away, but I came back and this Boys and Girls Club in San Francisco, which was a fantastic place. I was directing this little ceramics program with the kids, and I just started making mosaics. So the kids and I were like, you know, making these mosaics to hang on the walls and, you know.
Was this before Barcelona or after?
This was after.
After. And had you gone to Barcelona specifically? Were you like, I want to go to that city because of their mosaics, or did you even know about that?
No, the amazing thing is I had no idea. I was just like, I stopped in my tracks when I saw this building. I was like, what is this? This is incredible. And so when I was there in Barcelona, I saw the building. You know, there's many sites. And then I went kind of to every single one, made sure that I got to see them all. And then when I came home to the States, I was, you know, just on a mission. I was like, okay, I need to learn this now. I need to learn how to make, you know, mosaics. I need to learn how to lay tile. How am I going to figure this out?
So today, are you one of the top people in the United States that does that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a small, I don't know if I would say that, but there's a small group of us.
Yeah. And you all know each other?
We do. We have a conference that I've been so fortunate to attend. And teach, you know, there's a number of us that teach the conference.
Okay, before we go right to there, because that's the next thing we're going to go to, I just want to wrap this whole section up and go back to your diagnoses. And I wanted to know what changed once you were diagnosed.
Well, I definitely felt a lot of relief. And I felt like, okay, this isn't just me. This isn't like a flaw with my character. Like I'm okay. It's just that I have these challenges that I have to work through. So that felt really good.
Did your doctor recommend medication?
Yes. And I did. I was on medication at first, initially. Absolutely.
And how did that work?
That was great. And I felt like it was really helping me.
Uh-huh.
And then it was helping me, being on the medication was helping me to like behaviorally figure out what could help me. Like I could be clear-headed enough that I could, you know, just focus on the behavioral stuff as well.
Right, right. So it was like the medication allowed you to put other systems in place to teach yourself and to teach your brain what you needed to be successful, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, absolutely.
And can I ask you what medication, you're no longer on medication, it sounds like.
I will sometimes, if I feel like I'm struggling a little bit, mm-hmm. I will sometimes take it. But I've been trying to go without it because they're just some, you know, undesirable side effects that I've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard that more and more that, you know, the women that I talk to, the women I work with, they'll talk to their doctors and they create this. It's not a schedule because it's more just if there's something that I'm working on that I know that I typically really struggle with, I struggle to start it. And if I don't start it, it ends up being this big ball of mess at the end here. I will take medication in order to get that done because I know that's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I wish medication worked for me so I could do that, but unfortunately it doesn't. So everyone will always ask me, So Tracy, you need to ask what the medication is, as if because it works for you, it's going to work for them. That is not true. It's all, you know, it, every individual is different and we're all kind of guinea pigs in terms of we got to try it to see if it works. So will you tell us what you were taking and what you still take?
So I was taking Adderall. Mm-hmm. And I will still from time to time take Adderall.
Okay.
I tried other things. I tried Focalin. At some point I was put on Ritalin. But I mean, Adderall is what helps me the most. But again, like it, I also have to struggle with these side effects that I, you know, I don't know that I should talk about that.
So do you mind talking about it? What the side effects are?
Well, I definitely had trouble sleeping with Adderall. But the thing that was worse for me is I was having some dental issues. My dentist thought it was because of it.
Oh, so grinding?
No, like I was having a lot of dental work that I had to get done. And he said there was something about the saliva, like not producing saliva, that was causing me to get cavities. And I mean, I was having to get like root canals.
Yeah, that's so, oh, I mean, we did a whole podcast on that.
I should
that.
Say, but like, woo, I was like, okay, why I have to get root canals? Like, what is going on? Like, I've never had that problem.
So you were cracking teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard this for, you know, with the stimulant medication, and I am already such a teeth grinder that thank God that stuff didn't work for me. The stimulant medication didn't work for me because I don't think I'd have any teeth. So, okay, let's talk about now what you do. Can you describe for us what Mosaic Mural Art is and what it looks like?
Yeah. So it's a really ancient art form. So mosaic has been practiced for like thousands of years and created with all different types of materials. So way back, people were making mosaics with little pebbles and bits of stone and glass, found objects. When I started, it was really big to use broken dishes, like that whole shabby chic. That was that shabby chic time when everyone was doing like broken dish mosaics. You can use ceramics. And so a mosaic is basically just a picture that's made up of a lot of little pieces. And the neat thing about it is that you can use so many different types of materials and you can cover so many different surfaces. And so when I started, I was doing, you know, like gifts, you know, small pieces or wall art. And then my projects got bigger and bigger. And then I started, you know, doing big wall murals using mosaic. And so that was really exciting. And again, there's so many things you can do. I think it's been a great art form for me because I never get bored. There's always something new to learn. There's always a new technique to try. I get excited when somebody, you know, rolls out a new type of material. It's always keeps it interesting to be, you know, working in this field.
Do you add to that as well in terms of, have you discovered, you know, new techniques or new ways of doing mosaic that, you know, when someone sees your art or sees art, they know, oh, that's Jessica's art.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have like a particular style that we have. And I definitely think that people see my work and know it's mine. I love silkscreen. I started it in college. And so I played around a lot with silkscreen on clay. And so that's something that I'm doing more and more in my work and something I'd like to have more time to play around with and develop. So hopefully I'll be doing more of that, you know, as time passes. But yeah, I definitely have a style. And then, you know, I teach, I'm what you call a teaching artist. So I did end up becoming a teacher after all, really. And so I teach a lot of people how, you know, to do what I do. And then, you know, that's exciting because they're showing me the things that they've learned and I'm showing them the things that, you know, I learned, and I'm kind of sending a lot of people out into the world doing this work. So I'm teaching adults and.
And that is so fascinating to me. So, you know, you thought early on, I want to be a teacher. But the deal was you needed to figure out what it is that you wanted to teach and how you wanted to teach. You didn't want to do teaching the way most people do teaching. You had your own way.
Absolutely.
If you've been listening for a while, I bet you're starting to see your strengths and, dare I say, brilliance. So maybe you can imagine what working with me might be like. I always tell ADHD women, once you know you have ADHD, you study what ADHD looks like in women and specifically what ADHD looks like in you, forget about listening to all the experts. You don't need them. You already have the best expert on you, and that's you. I teach ADHD women how to trust themselves and build their confidence. And that starts with really learning about who they are, what's truly important to them, and what they need to be happy. And that's exactly what we do in our 6-week program. Your ADHD brain is A-OK. It includes my patented 6-step program, live coaching with me, and a private community of women just like you. To join our new cohort, find out more at spyhappy.me/AOK. Use the code podcastsass, SASS, to get $500 off the program just for being a valued podcast listener. So now, let's get back to our podcast.
So you weren't wrong.
Well, and it's great. I mean, I've used all the skills that, you know, like, my 20-year-old self thought I needed back in this weird little college. You know, I was learning about grant writing and I was hanging art shows and networking with other artists and curators. And I used all that stuff throughout my career. So, and because, you know, the ADD, I want to do all these different things.
Right. So you've been running your business for almost 25 years, which is unusual for us, right? We jump around a little bit more than that. How did it actually start? And how have you kept yourself interested so that you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater? You are continuing to grow in what it is that you love and you're not getting bored.
Yeah. So I started the business in San Francisco. Well, actually, I was living in Oakland. And I did finally get some formal training in mosaics. I took some courses at CCAC, it was called at the time, the California College of Art and Craft. I believe it has changed its name to the California College of Art and Design at this time. And I just started creating work to hang in some galleries. At the time, I think I was doing some craft shows. And then I landed my first what they call an artist residency, where I went into a school, I worked with the kids to make mosaics, and then those mosaics hung on the wall. So that was the first of, I mean, I've done hundreds of schools at this point. I worked with a designer in that area and started like putting some mosaics in people's homes, you know, like kitchen backsplashes.
And yeah.
I did a skylight. I did like a backyard mosaic in San Francisco. So I was, you know, kind of just learning the techniques and starting to get my name out there. And then we decided, my husband and I, that maybe being an artist, a professional artist in San Francisco was going to be a hard road because it's pretty expensive to live there. He's from Philadelphia. And so we decided to start, you know, looking here to see if this might be a place to move. And
did you have your daughter at that time?
No, I was in my mid-20s, I guess. So we got married and then moved to Philadelphia. And it was great. I was able to kind of establish myself here. We were able to buy a home. We bought the building that houses my studio and we renovated that. And that's just something that would have been a little harder to do in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
At the time that we were there, that would have been like the late 90s. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed living in Philadelphia and, you know, starting to get these really exciting opportunities here on the East Coast. And so, you know, it was a good good mood. I miss California, especially the Bay Area, but I try and get back fairly often.
So basically what you're saying is that who said you can't make a living, a very good living as an artist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a grind. Like it's hard work for sure. Yeah. Like I work really hard.
Uh-huh.
But I truly think that it's, you know, you could do it. Like you set your sight to what you want to do. Make it happen. There's a lot of avenues within the arts, you know, and I mean, I really enjoy teaching. I don't like spending all my time alone in my studio. I mean, I will, and I'll listen to your podcast when I'm in there, but I do like interacting with people. And so that's where, like, for me, teaching, you know, helps me to kind of diversify what I do, I guess, but then also it helps to just, what's the word that I'm looking for? It just helps socially to, you know, to have that feedback and, you know.
Well, and you had also mentioned that you've been social from as long as you can remember. So
that is true.
You said something to me when you wrote me, something about the fact that you work a lot on your own. So that's why you have time to listen to podcasts, and I'm sure not just ours, but other podcasts. And then you mentioned something about whether you're in your studio or you're perched on the side of a building. Like, what?
Well, because, you know, as a muralist, you got to climb up the scaffolding.
Oh. So I guess you don't have any fear of heights.
Oh, well, I do, actually. And I have fear of faulty scaffolding. I've had one scaffolding that was sort of starting to roll down the side.
Oh, my God.
Terrifying. A man came running up and held it in place and just got the locking mechanism fixed on it.
Oh, my gosh.
But no, it's actually not that common for me to be on scaffolding. But like it's part, you know, when you're a muralist, that's one of the things you do. And as I'm getting older, I'm trying to, you know, encourage people to stay low with, you know, where they want to put their mosaics and indoors. Because like this summer heat in Philadelphia, to be outside working is...
Wow. Wow.
No.
That would just count me out, right? I could not even, like, I can barely just go to the, you know, like, oh, I don't know, when we're, you know, I'm in New York and I'm on a high floor and I just kind of look down and literally my toes curl. I can't. I just can't even go. Yeah. And it's totally safe.
It takes some getting used to, that's for sure. But like, it's fun. No, the funny thing about being on the side of the building for a long period of time is that you meet a lot of people. Like everyone wants to come and talk to you and tell you all about themselves or about the corner that you're on, or
that's interesting.
Feedback on your on what you're making.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but see, this is where hyper focus is my best friend, because whether I'm in my studio or I'm working on site. So what I'm doing, like when I say I'm working for a long period of time, I'm cutting up little pieces of tile, or I'm taking tiles that I make out of clay and I'm attaching them with cement to the wall.
So they're already made, right? This is all, I don't even know how you do that as far as just knowing what goes where.
Yeah, it's kind of all mapped out. And sometimes I'm improvising. Sometimes I have assistants or a team with me. Sometimes we're taking panels that I've already constructed in my studio and attaching them to a wall and then just filling in the seams. So I do it all different ways.
So Jessica, you're a public artist who's had success with large-scale commission work and artist residencies. Both of these must require a lot of logistical planning. So how do you do that? How do you make this work?
That's a good question. I feel like at this point I have it down to kind of a science. Like I know that, I have to go to the meeting, do the site visit, take the measurement. I have a very, I keep very careful notes. I take a lot of pictures on my phone. Like I take pictures of everything and then I label them, like, all right, put them in folders according to jobs. I kind of make lists of, you know, the names of the principal you know, people that I'm going to be working with. Scheduling is probably the hardest part for me. But, you know, I really try to be careful about leaving time between parts of the project or between projects so that I don't get too, like, overwhelmed. And does that answer your question? I feel like I'm being a little vague.
So it sounds like, well, I mean, you know, every business is different and there's different parts to every business. And I'm assuming this has certain things that you do every time. And so my question is, or my comment is, it sounds like you've created a system.
Yeah.
That you follow every single time.
Yeah. And like my systems have systems and I try and do things like the same way. And, you know, I've learned along the way, like what really works. And then I just keep doing the same, you know, the same thing.
Do you have any help on the administrative stuff, which is often what we struggle so much with?
Not really, no.
You do it all? So there's no assistant?
I'm also working, so in the case of, I've done some murals in New York City, where you are, actually. So I was working on some murals that I did at New York Presbyterian Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done 5 murals for them over the years in their children's hospital and children's unit, and then one's in their emergency room. And hopefully you won't end up there when you're in New York.
No, but I was thinking of, I should go visit and go look for them.
But in that case, I have a project manager that's an art consultant, and she's like lining it all up, meetings, and she's kind of keeping me on track with, you know, like deadlines and things. So in some cases, I'm partnering with people who are taking some of those jobs away from me, or I can delegate those things to, or I just finished a project with the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And for that project, we had a big crew of people. We had people from the Arts Council and people from an arts organization here in Philadelphia and people from the Turnpike, and everyone was working together to make sure all of our logistical needs were taken care of. So it's not just, I'm doing my piece of it, but then there's a lot of other people coordinating. Or the art teachers that I work with at schools, they'll be coordinating installation, or volunteers, or they'll be setting up a schedule that works for them and their students that I can just kind of jump into. So all that stuff doesn't fall on me. I'm kind of fortunate in that regard. I do have to make sure, you know, I have all the tiles we need and all the grout. And I always try and look ahead to my next few projects. So I'm always ordering ahead of time, make sure I have all the products that I need and the tools and all that stuff.
So again, you're working within a system that you've created that you know is going to work. And do you do anything last minute, or is all of this, is the structure and the planning, like, you know, do you ever run out of materials and it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't order this, or does that not happen?
Oh, yes, that does. Certainly. I mean, I can't, okay. I'm always planning, but I'm certainly, you know, running out of materials, or, you know, I forget something at the studio. As all of us are, I am a good problem solver. I can always come up with something at the last minute to figure something out.
Wonderful.
You know, being my own boss too, I have to say, it is nice because I can, you know, I can call up a school and say, listen, the tile didn't come in. Like, you know, we're going to have to either work on a different part of the project, or, you know, can we reschedule for or something like that. That does happen. It's not like that never happens.
Right. Right. So. But you're absolutely right, because you're running the show. There's no one to answer to. You can certainly call the client and say, oh, I'm sorry, but the tile didn't come in, regardless if it didn't come in because you didn't order it early enough, or there's really a problem, right? You ordered it and it was the supplier's issue.
Yeah. And also, I'm very lucky that, you know, I work with a lot of the same people over and over again. I did one project for a little zoo outside of Philadelphia called the Elmwood Park Zoo, and then they called me four different times to do murals. So like, they know me, I know them, they know, you know, so
relationships.
So, you know, they get to know a realer me every time we do a project together, possibly.
Right. How long do these projects typically take? Like, how many of them do you do in a year?
I generally do between 6 and 8 projects a year.
Okay. And that makes it much more manageable too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also doing other things. Like, I'm teaching classes in my studio, and I might do like a little project where I just go somewhere for a couple of days and, you know, teach a workshop or something. But yeah, I'm doing like 6 to 8 larger scale projects a year. And those are either in schools or commissions or like a combination of the two. Like yesterday, we finished all the tile work for a synagogue community project. So it was all the members in the synagogue working together to create a mosaic wall in the outside of their building.
Yeah. Also, you know, on your website, I noticed that you mentioned mosaic team building. What is that?
Something that's been really fun that started a number of years ago. Somebody called me and just asked, well, you know, I see you do a lot of school projects. Can you do corporate team building? And I said, well, I don't see why not. Like, I think that would work. So we started creating like a program where I went into some different companies. I think the first one was Marriott. And gathered all these executives together. They're wearing their, you know, suits. And they're like nice dresses.
Oh my God.
And then I'm like giving them safety goggles and tools. And they all made mosaics together in small groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to like discuss, you know, okay, what do we want this to look like? You know, how are we going to, what are the colors going to be? And so they really had to come together and make this artwork. And it was a really fun process. And then they hang it on the wall of their office for their facility. So like that particular example, I'm saying Marriott, like that was the sales office. So that was the group of executives. We put, you know, they put them on the wall. But then I replicated that project many times. The two biggest ones we did were in hospitals. So we would set up in the cafeteria, you know, in these hospitals. And that was so interesting because we would see all these people coming through working on these mosaic panels. And it was like the surgeon standing next to, you know, the cafeteria worker that gives him his lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this idea of coming together and creating art together kind of evens the playing field. And it was so interesting in this setting, you know, where no one is used to being at work making art together. And it just, yeah, so that was like, that's been a really fun kind of offshoot of mosaics that I do, doing these team building events. And so we've done, you know, a lot of them. And then in some cases, they'll be hung, like the work will be hung in very prominent places in either the hospital or building, you know, in the lobby or the cafeteria. And that's fine for people to like walk past the work that they did with their coworkers.
I'm curious, have you seen a difference when you see all these different people with all these different careers, they all come together, they create these mosaics. Have you noticed a pattern of who's more creative versus less creative? Like,
that's
what they do for a living?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Actually, yeah, there was like a group of like, they were like the art department of an organization, and they were like top of the class.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, like they're going to make, you know, better mosaic than I would. Like, what are they doing? They had like a whole plan. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But now I think the fun part is like that they all don't know what to do, and they kind of, you know, have to figure it out together. And, you know, they're challenged, but that, you know, they may overcome their challenge. It's like the, you know, now that I know a little more about team building, it's kind of the perfect scenario where they, you know, they have to come together to, you know, work things out.
Yeah. I noticed that you also offer classes, and I'm telling you, if I were in Philadelphia, I would have signed up already. I love what you do. And I don't know if this is just Mosaics in general. It probably is, but there seems like there's so much opportunity. They seem so charming and full of whimsy. And I don't know, there's just something really beautiful about them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things that are special about Mosaic. I think when you're learning as a beginner, and one of the things that I always tell people, it's very forgiving. So like, it's not like the type of artwork where you have to study for years and, you know, like to maybe make something that looks half decent, or, you know, it's like super process oriented. So by the time you get to the third step, you've lost interest or whatever. But like, you can sit down in a night and like make something really nice. And so I think that that's why it's accessible for people. And that's why I love doing it with groups of people, because, you know, everyone can pitch in and make something pretty good without a whole lot of training. I have a storefront studio where I teach workshops. And then, I just teach individuals there. And then that's separate from what I do in the schools or with different companies.
And that's probably why you've been able to make this work for 25 plus years, right? Because you have constantly kind of, your business has evolved into all these different areas, which makes it new and exciting.
Yes. And every time I try something new, I'm like, oh, that worked out pretty well. Okay, let's market that. You know, like, how can I get more of those?
Right.
No, I think that's a good way to do it too. When you find like a model that works, that is, where you can make a nice profit, then you figure out, okay, that's what I need to, you know, try and make happen again. Just replicate it.
Right. Right.
And it keeps it interesting. Although like sometimes, you know, people are thinking, how do you do all these different things? Like, this is insane. Like, you do, you know, the art, you do the teaching. Like, every now and again, my student will, you know, see something I'm working on in my studio. I'm like, are you making that too? Like, what?
Yeah.
So it is a little crazy too.
So what are the ADHD traits that you feel are responsible for your success as a mosaic mural artist?
100% hyper-focus. I think the fact that I can like sit in my studio and work on a mosaic for 8 hours at a time, and it's like no time has passed, and I can just get in that zone, that's, and it feels so good. Like it feels really good to do that work. And that's when I'm usually listening to a podcast. And then also I just think I get a lot of ideas, and I don't know if that's a ADD thinking outside the box.
Totally.
But I feel like it's, you know, just sometimes so many ideas.
Yeah.
I'm never like stuck like with, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do here. Like if anything, I'm getting too many ideas. I have to weed out like the ones that maybe that wouldn't be. And so that I feel so blessed by that, you know, just this constant source of like images popping into my head that I can use. So, yeah.
And what do you think the key to living successfully with ADHD is?
Well, hard question. I definitely mean you have to be easy on yourself. Like, you know, you can't, like there was a time when I was just so hard on myself. And I think you have to, you know, give yourself some grace, because with the frustrating challenges, there's also a lot of good that comes. And so I try to just be grateful for that and grateful for like the success that I have, and not get too hung up on like something negative someone says, or like, oh, darn it, I forgot. You know, I was supposed to be like,
see,
you know, this time.
So do you just kind of laugh it off? It's like, oh, well, whatever.
Yes, I tend to have that kind of self-deprecating humor. So I'll laugh it off or I'll make a joke. You know, if I'm talking to a friend or someone close to me, like they know, you know. And I guess I'm just honest about, or I try to be honest about some of the things I struggle with, I suppose.
Yeah.
But also, I think you have to kind of manage people's expectations a bit too. You know, like I tried not to say to someone, okay, this artwork will be ready, you know, on this day. I'll say, listen, I'm going to try and have it done at this time. Might be a little later. You know, I try and leave things a little open.
You give yourself some fudge room just in case.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't want to promise people something that's going to be a real struggle for you to deliver. And I know people do that whether or not they have ADD, you know. You never know, like, if there's going to be supply chain issues or whatever.
Right.
You're just not as tense about, you know, whether or not something's going to work out in the exact way you think it's going to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jessica, where can people find you if they want to know more about you and what you do?
So, I am on Instagram and Facebook. My account is Bella Mosaic. So, BELLAMOSAIC. And that's my website as well, bellamosaic.com.
Wonderful.
BELLAMOSAIC.com. And and I do a lot of work around this region, like Philadelphia, New Jersey, doing a lot of work around Pennsylvania. I go up to New York, did a project in Florida last year. I definitely travel for these projects, and I travel for, you know, the artist residencies. I travel for team building. I don't travel so much for, I wouldn't travel for like a residential project or anything, but I've been fortunate to be able to do some municipal and like corporate work, you know, in other parts of the country.
So what's an artist residency?
So when I say artist residency, well, there's a few different things that I refer to as an artist residency. So there are a lot of organizations that will put artists in the schools. So the idea is that you would go into a school, work with the kids for a certain number of days, and then at the end, there would be something to show for that time. So in my case, it's a mural, but like there might be a theater group that does a residency, and at the end of their time period, they would have a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Or musician. I've also done residencies. I did one in a retirement home in central Pennsylvania. So I worked for 10 days last summer with a bunch of folks that were living at that retirement home. And then we created some murals. So it doesn't have to be a school, but it's generally like a place people are gathering, a center. But then there are other types of artist residencies where organizations will bring an artist in to live somewhere and work outside of, you know, where they live. So I'm doing one of those in the fall. I'll be living in for a month in Sardinia, Italy.
Oh, how great.
Doing a residency there. So I won't be teaching, but I'll be creating work and utilizing this studio space that they give me and having some interactions with the village, the people that live in the village.
And so for an artist residency like that, is the idea that they provide the space? I don't know if they provide any kind of living, you know, stipend, but when you leave, do you leave like your mosaics? Are you doing a mural for them, or how does that work?
Well, for this particular program, they ask all the artists that are involved to donate something. So I just saw one of the artists that was recently there donated a workshop to all the villagers. So all the villagers came and learned how to do watercolor painting, which was really nice. for my, and you know, could be other things too. For my residency, I am donating a small sign that will hang, that I will leave, that will be hung at the facility.
Okay.
So I'm doing a mosaic sign that I'll be putting in my backpack and hoping that it gets there intact.
Got it. So it's all different. I mean, you can have an artist residency where you come to a city that you don't live in, you stay there for a month, you do, you paint a bunch of pictures, and then you can actually sell them, or you donate them, or it can be anything, basically.
It can be anything. And sometimes the organization will pay you to be there, providing service for their organization. And sometimes you will pay them, just to help cover your cost of the cost of living. But usually it's a very discounted rate because it's supplemented by, grants and foundations. Yeah, it's a pretty exciting and interesting world out there for artists, these residencies.
No, I think that's
and it is a little confusing, the way that it, or the, how it's called, how it's referred to.
Yeah. Well, I just always knew it was something that it's a good thing and it's an honor, but I didn't quite know how exactly it works.
I guess you could say it's kind of like a cultural exchange. So it's a way that artists are being brought into an area organization to, just provide like an experience for the people that utilize that.
Perfect. Okay. So Jessica, this is all going to be in the show notes, but if people want to find you, want to know more about what you do, they're going to go to bellamosaic.com or Bella Mosaic on both Instagram and Facebook, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Wonderful. Jessica, thank you so much for spending time with us here today. It was truly an honor to get to know you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so exciting to talk to you today.
Wonderful. So that's what I have for you for this week. If you like this episode with Jessica, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal is to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. As always, you're listening to ADHD for Smartass Women. Come join me over at TracyOutsuka.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you here next week. You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Outsuka, and we're available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Not coincidentally, ADHD for Smartass Women, it's also the name of our free Facebook group. We're a totally smartass community of successful, ambitious women who share our ADHD wins, questions, and workarounds. Join us at TracyOutsuka.com, where you can also find more information on our Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system. I spy a happier life for us, and I'll see you again next week. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.